Chapter 7. The skies of the Afrey world Braille were troubled, threatening. Dark rain clouds loomed low over the ruined canyon city, filtering the light to a brassy gloom. Out on the severed remnant of what had once been a cross-canyon bridge, Second Blade Akreen and his Shuriga scout awaited the Trenaval leader Livercore. The dreg bout had not gone well for the Trenaval task army. In the face of the Zavri onslaught, it had fallen back to this final redoubt where, depleted and hemmed in, their leader had requested a truce parley. When recordings of this clash were replayed all across the war cage, it would amply demonstrate the enduring might and irrevocable judgment of the Shuskar gunlords.
"He delays, invincible one," the Shuriga scout said in her sibilant voice. "He insults you by making you wait, which is an affront."
"He knows that an ordained death decree hangs over him,"
Akreen said.
"For one so condemned, the import of lesser censures is minor at best. Besides, skulker, the insults of traitors mean nothing to me. Pointless noises from a worthless source."
"We know how to deal with betrayers on Kulos," the Shuriga muttered, hunching her skinny shoulders beneath battered hide armour. "An arm, a leg, and an eye to begin with."
"Enough," Akreen said, pointing with one silvery, emblem-adorned hand. "He comes."
Livercore was taller and burlier than most Trenavali, and wore an impressive cloak of shiny black chol fur across his wide shoulders. He was bareheaded and otherwise clad in the rough grey leathers of a Trenaval ranker, apart from the segmented metal gauntlets on his large hands. Akreen had pondered briefly on how to configure his body frame, swiftly settling on the symbols of punishment. His arms, chest and legs bore their usual archaic battle armour skin forms, but they were now covered in the emblems and glyphs of the Shuskar Lords, the Redeemed Order of Steel, the Grand Escalade, and the Chamber of Judgment, as well as the sigils of the Hold World Viceroys and the banner badges of those task armies whose loyalty to the Lords was unblemished and unquestioned. In addition, he had lengthened his legs and adapted his shoulders to resemble the formal robes of the Chamber Judges, which included the crossed hilts of execution swords jutting up at the back. Akreen wanted to be the embodiment of the war cage in all its dutiful and honourable glory, the personification of the inexorable fate which had come for Livercore. Braille would be his tomb. And as Livercore approached with a steady, heavy tread, one of Akreen's precursors chose that moment to bestow an utterance.
"To the cooking pot the Yossig bird came, self-plucked and trussed."
Z. Maintaining his outward composure took some effort. It was Zivalin, of course. If any one of his seven precursors was likely to violate the in-combat silence vow, it would be Zivalin. As some of the others offered up remonstrances, Akreen closed them all off by focusing on the traitor, Livercore, who came to a halt several paces away.
"Thank you, Second Blade, for agreeing to this truce," said the Trenaval leader, his voice guttural and hoarse.
"Our collective gratitude for allowing an exchange is..."
Akreen cut him off.
"The bouts of the Grand Escalade, even the dreg bouts, have clearly set out rules. My acknowledgement of their primacy here has no bearing on emotive issues. Gratitude has no place here. Only the matters under discussion. What are they?"
Livercore gave him a heavy-lidded look, dark eyes sunken beneath a furrowed brow.
"Clemency," he said, "not for myself, obviously."
"In accordance with the Dregbout ordinances, all who take the field are considered combat effectives. The Chamber Judgment also provides the following rules of engagement.
if you are killed or captured within the first 10 minutes of the final bout stage, then 1/4 of Trenivali effectives selected by lot will face execution. If you are killed or captured after the lapse of 10 minutes, then 1/2 of Trenivali effectives selected by lot will face execution. If, in either case, after your death or capture, the Trenivali task army continues to fight, then all will face execution, without exception. Akreen paused, glanced back along the canyon wall to where the shiny ranks of his half-battalion of Zavri veterans awaited. Or you could immediately surrender yourself to my custody, and only 1/10 of the Trenivali would face execution. What say you? Livercore nodded thoughtfully.
Correct me if I am wrong, Second Blade Akreen, but I do not believe that the Trenivali and the Zavri have ever faced each other across the battlefield, not in all the many millennia of the Grand Escalade, or am I wrong?
Akreen pondered this, sent a query scroot scurrying through his siloed memories, and found confirmation of the Trenival leader's comment, along with a strange then-mote.
Your observation is correct, Akreen said.
The Trenival task army never rose above the 32nd grade, while the Zavri have never fallen below 19th. Trenival, however, has always been loyal to the Shaskar lords, unwavering in their duty across the centuries. Records also show that the Trenival Hold World sent several task armies to fight for the Shaskar lords during the Beshefis insurrection, acquitting themselves with great honour.
We still sing songs in their memory, said Livercore. Their valour lives on.
Yet, by your actions, you have sullied their name, Akreen said.
The Trenivali honour was unmarred until just days ago, when undeniable proof came to light that you, their general, had conspired with the rebellious Chainer vermin. Just in the last hour, the Trenival Viceroy has repudiated your actions and stripped you of all titles, subsequent to the Iron Chief's proclaiming the Sever Shun against you. Actions like yours seem insane, yet to my eyes you do not look like one deranged.
Insanity comes in many colours, Second Blade,
said Livercore.
Like consigning millions of thinking, feeling beings to short lives of brute drudgery and planned ignorance, or like channeling untutored youngers into the triumph camps, which indoctrinate them for combat, for the bouts, to die on some affray world far from their kin for no good reason.
Underworkers are by nature fitted to their labour, said Akreen. I was wrong. You now begin to sound like one gone insane, not unlike the chain of vermin to whom you passed on vital secrets. Livercore shrugged.
I do not expect you to understand these things. Your eyes show you only the things that they have been taught to see.
He gave Akreen a narrow look.
Indeed. I have heard that the Zavri enjoy a peculiar form of immortality, that the spirits of your ancestors live on within that gleaming metal flesh of yours, and that your own spirit will live on after you cease to be. Is this so?
Akreen heard the stirrings at the back of his thoughts. Irritation from Drolm, indignation from Ifan, the grand outrage of Cassocks, Togol's self-important disdain, Zivalin's seditious glee, the cold malice of Rajeg, as usual from Gredaz, eldest and most elusive, there was nothing. And for a single moment, Akreen felt a strange urge to confide in this criminal, to explain how the process of scission created the next generation of Zavri, and how only one in a brood would end up carrying the self-patterns of the precursors, the lineal ancestors. How that responsibility conferred the advantage of having all those life experiences to draw on, and how this could cause resentment in his brood device siblings. Suddenly appalled to find himself thinking these thoughts, he quickly erased them from awareness and addressed the traitor with the appropriate level of scorn.
My forebears oversee my every decision and act, Akreen said. Their guidance safeguards the honour of my line. Clearly, you hold your ancestors in scant regard.
The Holy Walkers say that the souls of dead Trenavali are sent to be tasted in the mouths of the Night Gods. The balance of purity and taint in our essence determines our fate in the Shride Life. When I meet my ancestors, I shall at least know if my truth is the same as theirs.
Tribal primitives.
Toe.
A heroic insolence.
Z.
Have him flayed.
Ra. Ignoring these back-brain mutters, Akreen considered the Trenival leader's response and felt a slight echo of the envy that picked at him whenever he encountered one of his device siblings. None of them, after all, had to share their minds with the dead.
Your replies are not relevant to the matter under discussion, he said. I have made clear the adjudged outcomes. What say you?
Smiling, Livercore glanced thoughtfully up at the decrepit ruins of the canyon city.
Originally, our dregbout adversaries were to be the Tefoi, against whom we judged we would have a better than even chance. But not long after gating here a day ago, an Escalade official brought word of the verdict from the chamber, and then the decision to allow the dregbout to be played out, with the Tefoi replaced by the more formidable Zavri. My rankers were a little surprised, but their resolve was unshaken, and they looked forward to pitting themselves against your shining legion. That has not changed. We will see the bout through, and we will try to make you remember us.
Then there is nothing more to say.
The Trenival leader nodded, turned away, and retraced his steps back to where the remnants of his task army were positioned by crumbling walls and sagging floors. A Akreen Shiroga scout chuckled as the burly figure receded.
Ha! Perhaps a vestige of honour yet remains in his putrid mind, said the scout.
The judges of the chamber have spoken, Akreen said. A traitor shall die this day.
Amid bloody slaughter,
the Shiroga scout said with relish. And the scout was right. On his return to the canyonside territory held by his Zavri half-battalion, Akreen ordered the Maul platoons to advance. This was a close-quarters dreg bout, no energy or projectile weapons permitted. So, the Maul platoons were armed with pulver hammers to break down walls and sawglaves for hand-to-hand combat. The hammers pounded, the floors shook underfoot, and the Zavri crashed through, heralded by clouds of dust. Battle was joined. The Trenivali were valiant and showed no fear, only their blood and viscera. They were skilled with light-to-medium weapons and armour, but they could not stand against the superior speed and strength of the variable Zavri physique. They were not without a certain tactical cunning, however. Twice, solitary Zavri were cut off and doused with viscous flammable mixtures that clung and burnt at a high temperature. At the same time, the Trenivali ambushers wound lengths of wire around the burning Zavri's midsection, arms and legs, obviously thinking that they would be weakened by the heat. But the flaming mixture didn't burn hot enough, and the ambushers died. Akreen led the assault from the centre of his forces, monitoring the progress of the forward platoons and examining the bodies of the enemy to see if Livercore had fallen. Once, as they passed through a gallery lined with heavy pillars, masking covers fell away from two columns, and a pair of Trenivali leapt out, hurling spears. One was snatched in mid-air by one of Akreen's guards, the other was deflected by the arm shield of another guard. The two attackers were cut to pieces without hesitation, and through it all, Akreen's precursors sang battle fugues in joyful chorus. They revelled in these moments, the chance to live through him and taste even the meagre shadow of glory. After the first 10 minutes of combat operation, no evidence of Livercore's death had emerged. By the 20th minute, the Zavri progress along the canyon-side corridors had slowed due to the defender tactic of shoring up entrances and walls with mounds of rubble and masonry. Faced with this, the assault platoon simply threw together ramps from the plentiful debris and broke through to the upper floors. The Trenivali had already laid some spring-loaded traps up there along the likely approaches, but they caused only brief annoying delays. After nearly 30 minutes of bloody, one-sided slaughter, a Kreen Shuriga scout came to him with news.
"The end is near, invincible one," she said. "The last of them and their timid leader have barricaded themselves into some ancient, blasphemous shrine at the end of this level. There are no more stairs beyond it, no tunnels and no escape."
"How many still live?"
"A handful, perhaps as many as 10. There are 2 entrances, both blocked with rubble and smashed furniture."
The scout twitched her nose.
"I could smell oil, so they are planning a warm welcome."
Akreen shook his head. "The same failed tactic.
Tell them all platoons to get to work. Bring that wall down, move in and crush them. Say that I want Livercore taken alive if possible."
The scout chuckled and scurried off with the new orders. The pulverhammers were creating a thunderous, non-stop cacophony by the time Akreen and his command officers reached the shrine. Wide steps led up to a towering facade, covered in an ornate frieze of coiling creatures arranged around 3 huge faces, which time had ravaged and rendered unrecognizable. It was a venerable remnant from the canyon city's lost past, its every carven glyph and creature carrying a message out of antiquity. Akreen took it all in with understanding and appreciation for a brief moment before ordering more platoons forward. The barricades at the entrances burst into flames just then, but the besieging Zavri ignored them. As the pulverhammers battered down the entrance pillars, widening the gaps, others moved in to attack the burning debris and drag some of it out of the way. Then success. Joyful cries rang out as a section of the ornate facade came down with a loud rumble. One of the immense corroded faces shifted, then toppled backwards to land with a resounding crash. All around, the ragged gap flames flickered. Ruddy glows veiled by clouds of old dust sent a swirl as the silvery forms of Zavri troopers rushed in, heedless of the fires. Flanked by his guards, Akreen followed the main body of his troops into the shrine from which a rhythmic banging racket was now emanating. In the grey gloom, rotted rags of banners and tapestries hung along the left-hand wall, while to the right were 2 flights of steps. One led down the far wall past banks of seating to the pillared floor of the shrine, while the other led down the middle. More huge faces looked down to where a handful of Trenivali stood in a line before a lamp-lit altar, beating the pillars with clubs, staffs and blade hilts. Behind the altar, Livercore sat in a canopied throne. At a Kreen's gesture, the Zavri rushed down the stairways to close with the last defenders. Even as the charge began, Livercore threw back his head and roared with laughter. Akreen was moving towards the middle stairs to begin his own descent when someone plucked at his arm. Whipping round in annoyance, he saw that it was his Shuriga scout.
"Incomparable one, I can hear hammering!"
"Yes, from those doomed fools below."
"No, from beneath, from the underpinnings!"
A deep, muffled thud, loud enough to be heard right across the shrine, came from under the steps. Akreen felt the floor tremble and knew that they had been led into a gigantic trap. The scout was tugging on his arm, begging him to move back, as were his precursors, wailing in unison from the confines of his mind. The scout hauled him back towards the ragged gap between the shrine's entrances. It was 10 or 15 paces away, which now seemed like a great distance, as terrible screeches and structural groans came up from below as dust began falling from above. The floor suddenly lurched and slumped noticeably, sloping away from the exits. Down on the shrine floor, Zavri attackers and Trenivali defenders alike had abandoned the fight and were scrambling up the banks of seating. Dust and grit was coming down in trickles and curtains along with chips and pieces of masonry. Akreem was just a few paces away from safety when there was a deep grinding noise and a gap tore open right across the floor directly ahead. A sudden jolt knocked Akreem off his feet, and the section of floor he was on sank and tipped back still further. As he regained his feet, fear filled his limbs with energy, and he drove himself forward in a leap towards the receding stable edge. Self-preservation instincts had already forced his limbs into their strongest elongation pattern, giving him just enough reach. His splayed hands slammed onto the jagged floor brink, grabbed for solid purchase, hung there for a second before he was seized and pulled up to safety. Held there, Akreen had enough time for a single glance back over the precipice and saw the whole of the shrine break away and fall, saw sunlight spear through the splintering walls, saw the silver forms of Zavri troopers caught in the chaos. Then the ceiling itself cracked and fell, a roaring cascade of shattered masonry. One monstrous shard struck the uneven floor edge a few paces along, shearing off a large area and narrowly missing one Zavri, who gave a disdainful sneer before retreating a step or two. Quickly, Akreen directed everyone back to the corridor outside the shrine, then further back to safer passageways and chambers. Once there, he ordered his Shuriga scout and his command staff Securitor to head down one of the lower floors to find a spot from which they could use their scopes to study the floor of the canyon more than 1,000 yitten down. While they were away, Akreen went from platoon to platoon, compiling an index of the missing. He was mulling over the disturbingly long list when his Securitor and the Shuriga returned unexpectedly.
"We had just reached a good observation point a couple of floors below when the Grand Escalade inspection barge arrived," said the Securitor officer, whose name was Tesnik. "Moments later, however, three flyers bearing Chamber of Judgment sigils swooped in and took up positions around the Escalade craft. About a minute later, the barge rose back up and flew over this side of the canyon."
Akreen nodded.
"Back to Kamak's base, the Bout encampment."
He looked at the scout.
"What did you see?"
"Death and wreckage, illustrious one,"
the scout said thoughtfully.
"At 1,000 yitten, these scopes do not reveal many details. But I could see a few of our troops moving around the impact area. No sign of Trenivali's survivors. The Chamber's judgment has been accomplished."
"At a heavy cost, Second Blade," said the Securitor Denesk. "Multiple involuntary scissions may well have taken place already."
"I am aware of this, Securitor Denesk," said Akreen. "When the Chamber of Judgment assigned this duty to the Zavri, they did not promise that the Trenivali would meekly offer no resistance. Was that what you were expecting from this dreg bout?"
"Why, no, Second Blade. Perhaps you seek to undermine my status and the legitimacy of my orders. Is that your purpose?"
"Second Blade, I spoke in error. My thoughts were flawed."
"That is a great shame, Securitor," Akreen said. "Then I suggest that you reconsider your fitness for this post on my staff. In the meantime, ascertain from the Pathfinders if they have yet determined the most direct route to the extraction camp."
"At once, Second Blade."
As Denesk hurried, the scout gave a grunt and a grin.
"His comments reach no audience, Masterful One," she said. "Was he more stupid than ambitious?"
"Denesk is a lineager with two precursors," Akreen said. "One of them, Dijal,
I met earlier on in my latter youth stage, and his feral manner made a lasting impression upon me. My harsh words were meant as much for him as for Denesk.
Denesk's other precursor is that black-souled, meaning twister Tashor, who I warned you about, boy, and still you advance their lineager to your staff, fool.
Ipan, his most immediate precursor, had never risen above over-platoon leader, despite his ambition. Akreen's contrasting success in rising to the rank of second blade provoked only a tireless fault-finding, which Akreen had grown adept at blanking out, most of the time. The Sharaga scout uttered a dry chuckle.
Yes! Keep the ambitious ones on a leash. A wise arrangement. There will be concern about our losses, however.
Yes. Which is why we must move out, Akreen said. Go tell the platoon leaders to be ready for imminent departure. Tell them that I expect to hear news of casualties by the time we reach Kamax base.
As you will it.
The Zavri half-battalion, being half of the Black Shield battalion, took only a short while to repack and form up. The path out of the canyon-side city followed a zigzag of stairs, flights of pale stone steps, worn, cracked and rounded, that climbed through a dozen decrepit floors. The machined edges and surfaces of a technological civilization were still visible on all sides, but the firefights of innumerable escalade bouts, combined with climatic weathering over a century or more, had left their mark. The extraction camp, Kamax Base, was actually a complex of buildings located not far from the canyon passage exit. The Zavri emerged into bright sunlight, marching three abreast. Silver limbs and torsos were coated in dust as fine as the swirls kicked up by the warm, moist wind now blowing in from the wastelands. The previous dark cloud had dissipated to thin tails strung out across a bleached sky. At this latitude, it afforded a magnificent view of the nearby war cage worlds, lines of pale, hazy planets that faded into the distance. Only the oceans and land masses of the nearest were properly visible. An escalade bout officially ended when the victors crossed the camp threshold under their own efforts. Outside the gates, shackled lines of brown-clad underworkers sat in the shade of the walls, possibly a lull between labour periods. Just inside, grey-robed escalade arbiters were waiting as Akreen led the Black Shield half-battalion through. The victor's bell began to clang, nine harsh peals, and he was surprised to see the red-cowled and blue-masked form of the Arbiter General himself descend the steps of the afterbout hall. Normally, victors were welcomed by the camp's over-arbiter, so perhaps it was the significance of Livercore's betrayal and subsequent death sentence which had earned the personal attention of the Arbiter General of the Grand Escalade, Shuskar Lord Veshen. Akreen came to a halt two paces from the foot of the hall steps, where the Arbiter General now stood. Behind him, the Zavri column likewise stopped, several hundred feet slamming down into the ready stance in perfect gleaming unison.
Second Blade Akreen, say what must be said.
The Shuskar were tall, broad-shouldered bipeds who always wore elaborate attire and those serene, pale-blue masks. The Arbiter General's regalia consisted of layers of exotic, finely-made garments, rich reds and yellows fringed with amber, the whole assemblage offset by the bulky, dark-grey iron gauntlet that Lord Veshen wore on his right hand. From within his red cowl, the pale blue mask gazed at Akreen, its frozen features sculpted to convey strength, wisdom and benevolence. The bare left hand was pallid and wrinkled, long trembling fingers absent-mindedly stroking the edge of a brocaded pocket.
Lord Arbiter General, Akreen said, the strong have triumphed and the weak have been vanquished.
The traditional words felt both reassuring and charged with meaning.
Death has eaten its fill, and we hunger for honour. The honour of the Zavri remains bright and undimmed, Second Blade, said the Arbiter General. You have carried out your duties in an exemplary fashion. I am gratified to confirm that the Zavri are welcome in Afterbout Hall. That was the cue for the Black Shield troopers to shout as one the word Shir, meaning loyalty, and to shout it four times, after which Akreen nodded to his command staff, who then led the platoons up the broad steps. But foremost in his mind were his concerns for those who had been caught in the collapsing shrine. It was customary, at this juncture, for the Over-Arbiter to hand to the victorious general a preliminary body count assessment. But the Arbiter General, flanked by Flashlance guards, was drawing off to one side. Before he could take a step in pursuit, though, he was forestalled by the approach of an Escalade official, a gangling tefoy in the black and dun robes of the Advisor, normally an Over-Arbiter's deputy.
The tefoy. Indifferent battle skills.
Ra.
Petty bureaucrats well suited to their master's purposes.
Z.
Second Blade, I am Advisor Pakel, said the tefoy in an officious monotone.
One gold-gloved, four-fingered hand came up and held out an erasable missiver. Wordlessly, Akreen accepted it, flipped back the cover and read the casualty report, committed the figures to memory, then closed the missiver and passed it back. Akreen saw him surreptitiously activate the erasure mode just before it was slipped away into an inside pocket.
My congratulations to you and the Black Shields for achieving victory without losses, said the Advisor.
How charmingly corrupt, Z.
Burnishing the likeness of invincibility, Dr.
Akreen ignored his precursors.
Honour and hard-won prowess told in the end, Advisor, he said. That and the blessings of the Shuskar lords.
A fitting response, Kar.
The response of a worm,
Tol.
Just another step in the dance of the burnishers,
Z.
Their blessings illuminate our lives, intoned the Advisor. Also, at the behest of the Chamber of Judgment, I am to give you a new set of interim orders. You are to make whatever command delegations you deem appropriate, then go straight to the primary launch platform, where a ship awaits you. Once aboard, you will receive additional orders.
He shrugged.
There is little else to say, Second Blade, except that these orders came directly from one of the Judge Eminence, Shuskar Lord Zanar himself.
An interesting elucidation, said Akreen. It is appreciated.
All in service to the War Cage.
With that, Advisor Padkel gave a small bow and moved on. Akreen watched him stroll away, feeling slightly puzzled. All in service to the War Cage? It sounded almost like a formal axiom, but Akreen had never heard it before. But he put that aside while he absorbed the main morsel of information that Judge Eminent the Lord Zanar was present and taking a personal interest in the last moments of Livercore's treacherous existence. Two Shuskar lords overseeing a dregbout and in person. Clear evidence, perhaps, that the Shuskar were determined and committed to crushing the Chainers and their allies and supporters. Akreen's command staff, the Securitor, Tacitor and Eruptor officers, were waiting at the top of the stairway, outside the entrance to Afterbout Hall, a pair of tall and clearly old rag-iron doors. He instructed them to keep the platoons under strict observance until everyone was gated back to the Zavri Holdworld. Drevall. When he explained that his own return would be delayed due to command obligations, no one queried further. On asking after the whereabouts of his Shuriga scout, he was told that the scout had followed the rest of the battalion into the hall.
Gauging that he had little time to see her out, Akreen bade farewell to his officers, descended the steps, and headed for the launch platforms. The blazing sunshine fell upon the sloped grey buildings of Camp Kamax, revealing every stain, every crack, every vein-like spread of rust trails from rusty pipes and fittings. Akreen had previously participated in several pinnacle bouts on this world, but this was the first time he had fought through the curious canyonside city. Apart from that cunning suicide trap, the Trenivali had presented no challenge to the Zavri, but if they had faced the Avang, or even the Sujalka, ah, what a test of body and spirit that would have been. Also, this bout had been comparatively restrictive in terms of both troop numbers and combat area. This was reflected in the dusty quiet that hung over much of the camp. Barracks, infirmaries, and meal houses that could accommodate opposing hosts four or five times that which the Zavri and the Trenivali had fielded lay empty and closed up. And a few hours from now, after the Zavri Blackshields had gated back to Drevall, and the Shuskar lords and the senior chamber and escalade officials had likewise departed, the camp personnel would commence clear-up operations in advance of the next bout.
Battle, blood, and strife are the hallmarks of normality. Stillness and repose are anomalies.
Ra. Tall blast shielding walled off the primary launch platform from the rest of Kamax base. Akreen's bout token gave him access at the guarded entrance, from where a dozen strides took him to the foot of a three-flight gantry. Above, the rim of the blast basin occluded much of the sky, plunging the ground beneath into shadow, along with the 60 or more heavy supports built to withstand the basin's weight and the force of thrust engines. Climbing the last few steps, he reached a covered landing at the top, and allowed a rare smile to crease his silvery face when he saw who was waiting for him.
"New orders, illustrious one," said the Shuriga scout.
Akreen regarded her with a kind of stern amusement. "How did you know I would be here?" The scout arched a pair of bushy eyebrows.
"Some of these spaces huddle close to the ground, like docile leaf-eaters. But Kamax has a tower and a mast, which I climbed to get a better view of the escalade wagons, bringing the bodies up from the canyon. I also saw you talking with the Arbiter General. Then, one of those Tefi poppet faces. And when you left the hall and headed towards this part of the camp, I knew where you had to be going, knew that it would be needful and fated."
"Sometimes you presume too much for your own good." The scout nodded.
"It is true, perceptive one, I do. I cannot think why you keep me in your service."
Giving the Shuriga a mock-serious glare, Akreen stepped across the covered landing to a doorway opening onto the primary launch platform. And when he saw the ship, a certain understanding dawned.
"The master descends, his ordination to bestow. Dr."
It was the Irtesh, command cruiser of the Zavri battle array, which meant that First Blade Tevashir was here and had sent for him. But did that mean he knew about how the Dregbout ended, about the collapse of the shrine, and the apparent ease with which Zavri casualties had been erased from the record?
"A scolding, a reprimand, or a demotion? Oh, the harsh fruits of disgrace."
Z.
"Punishment for such insignificance. Your babble grows even more inane."
Toe. Although Akreen had at times engaged his precursors in dialogue, most of the time he had learned to maintain a taciturn distance, a strategy which conferred some peace of mind. He had even stopped obsessing over the speechless, grim presence of Gredaz, who in all of Akreen's years had spoken only three times, with a grand total of 11 words, consisting of three no's, two not acceptables, and his longest ever comment, "It does not matter."
"First blade awaits, fearless one," said the scout. "Do you wish me to attend?"
"Fearless? Ha!
Ka."
Akreen nodded. "Follow." As he descended to the basin, he erased from his body frame the last vestiges of the chamber judge appearance that he had adopted earlier, along with all the symbols and emblems. In their place, he raised the standard officer armour form, formal and plain. Tevashir deplored the current fad for elaborate exteriors and fanciful decorations, favouring instead a more traditional austerity, which was in keeping with the stern discipline that accompanied his command over the Zavri battle array. With the Sharaga scout in his wake, Akreen strode down towards the slope-hulled shape of the Urtesh. It was a storm-grey and blood-red ship with raked predatory lines, crouching on six heavy-jointed legs, thick armour sections matching the open recesses in the hull. As they approached, one of the cargo lifts descended from the underside, bathed in light. Akreen and the scout climbed on, the lift began to rise, and moments later they were stepping off it within the crate-crowded confines of one of the Urtesh's secondary holds. A low, long console divided it from the cargo controller room, where Tevashir and some others were waiting. Akreen strode through, halted before his superior, and raised both fists to his chest in the officer's salute.
"This is later than I wished, second."
"Deepest contrition, first. I came as soon as I received the interim order."
Tevashir, preeminent combatant and first blade of the Zavri, nodded, cold silver eyes studying him intently.
"I've seen a preliminary report on the dregbout," he said. "Officials from the chamber were keen to let us know the high value they place on good relations with the Zavri. Thus, the document came to us by way of a consideration courtesy."
Tevashir's composure could not mask the contempt in his voice.
"So I know about Livercore's last desperate stroke, an unexpectedly drastic attempt to take you with him. Yet, clearly your luck held. But that is not why I wanted you here. There has been a development of some significance. Gabrozen Mav has escaped from the war cage."
Akreen felt a part of him grow still, even as angry outbursts raged back and forth in that gallery where his precursors came and went. Akreen's thoughts whittled down the possibilities, cross-referenced with any notable war cage events, anything that might provide an avenue of egress.
"First Blade, could the Harvest Flotilla have played a part?" he said suddenly. "The flotilla recently departed with two burn-off worlds. Perhaps he found a way onto one of them, stowing away."
Tevashir had turned to a nearby console and was flicking through screens of pale blue data, then paused and pointed.
"There was a report from a source on Sastok stating that Gabrozen Mav and several companions were seen entering an illegally displaced monogate. Time frame comparison shows that would have happened less than an hour before the Harvest Flotilla excised the second burn-off from the war cage."
He offered a sharp smile.
"Well deduced, second.
Know that our Shuskar masters have assigned to me the task of bringing that vermin to justice, and that I want you to accompany me to wherever that task takes us. I am sure that your own interest will add sharp eagerness to the hunt."
Akreen nodded. 4 years ago, he had been a lowly third claw, leading a long squad on Wilderland patrol during the interdiction of Palotreg City. Gabrozen Mav and a mob of four-armed Havlozen had attacked using freezer weapons that completely routed the Zavri, with only Akreen and a handful and his Sharaga scout escaping. Later, it was found that the Havlozen had piled the frozen bodies into an industrial ore crusher, then fed the result into an arc furnace. In later actions, the Havlozen suffered greatly, but the freeze weapons were never again seen in action. Akreen bowed his head a little, glanced at his Sharaga scout, saw an eager gleam in those eyes, while his precursors crooned a fervent assent.
"To the utmost limits of gratitude, I am honoured, First Blade," he said. "I await your orders."
"Good. Find quarters for yourself and your underling. said Tevashir. In only minutes from now, the Urtesh shall depart this world.